Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between, this is Tony's Political Ramblings. So today I wanted to get into the idea of agenda setting. And very, very simply, it's very much deciding what comes on, what goes into the public focus, what goes into the Senate, the House, the presidency, what gets on the agenda, what gets on their agenda, what are their eyes on? And it's basically, within this idea, I wanted to sort of touch on who has the most power in terms of setting that agenda. Who has the most power in determining what the federal government is going to focus all of its research on? And so I think of this as sort of a political whodunit. I'm going to take a look at some actors outside of the government, actors within the executive and legislative branch, and then I'm going to basically go down the line of suspects until we found our quote guilty party, the one who has the most power in terms of controlling the federal government's agenda. So a quick note on the courts just before we begin. The courts are more of a reactionary body. They're not meant to be making policy. They're just reacting to it. So they're not really up for consideration here in terms of being the most important. So the first one I'm going to take a look at is a combination. This first suspect, as it were, is going to be outside forces in the federal government. So you have the media, interest groups, and public opinion. Those are the three big ones we're going to lump into outside forces. They are important in the sense that, obviously, the public elects officials, the president and members of Congress, their state legislators, et cetera, et cetera. But even though there is this idea of, as far as the public is concerned, the national mood, which does affect who gets elected, it's simply a national mood sometime that is too diffuse. It's not concentrated enough in any one side or in any one issue to really have a control of what is specifically on the agenda. There are simply too many people with too many interests to constantly determine what the government is going to focus on. Now, when you move to interest groups, you have the opposite problem. Interest groups typically only advocate for one, maybe two issues, and they don't really concern themselves with anything else. Oil and gas lobbies are not really going to look at as what's going on in education. It doesn't concern them. They're only worried about their one issue, and so they cannot truly tackle the vast array of things that needs to be on a government's agenda. Now, and another issue that we run into with the media is that news coverage is really only happens at the end of a given event. It's a bill that's already on the way to being passed, or uncovering things that have already happened, which was the case with Watergate, which is still one of the most influential cases of the media setting the national mood, but it did not set the agenda. Those things that Watergate was uncovering with the Nixon administration had already happened. They were just uncovering them and letting them out to the public. So since those outside forces aren't the main force, let's take a look inside the government. Now, the first one we're going to take a look at here is going to be presidential appointees. These are individuals who are appointed as ambassadors and department heads, what have you. But we're really going to key on the department heads, the things like Secretary of Transportation, Secretary of Energy, et cetera, et cetera. And the most prominent example of these positions having strong power would be the Dulles brothers, who were John Foster Dulles, who was the Secretary of State, and then you had Allen Dulles, who was the director of the CIA, both during the Eisenhower administration. And because these two worked together so frequently, what you had was a sort of a covert and overt American foreign policy that was profoundly influenced by these two men, because they're able to work together in such a way that there was a sort of unified strategy. The Eisenhower administration, by extension, had a pretty consistent view that was pushed for foreign policy because of these two. And another point for these presidential appointees is that they run the entirety of their departments. The Secretary of Transportation is in charge of the Department of Transportation, these large, gigantic bureaucratic organizations. But they are still beholden to the president's will. The president will always defeat them in a head-to-head contest, in terms of an ideological contest, of course. The president's will always supersede the appointees. And so now that takes us to the president. Is the office of the president the most influential actor in terms of setting the agenda? Well, a good point in their column is that this office does hold power over the entire executive branch. They hold sway over the political appointees that they've appointed, and they control the entirety of the bureaucracies beneath them. And this is a very significant office. It's the one that we always get the most coverage for every 4 years when the elections roll around. In terms of executive orders, these are orders that can be passed unilaterally by the president, and they impact the entire executive branch. And because of this and their sway over Congress, particularly when there's a party alignment with the majorities of Congress, the president is really able to get their bills to the front of the queue, as we're seeing now with the Biden administration, with the Build Back Better and Freedom to Vote Acts always being at the top of Congress's agenda. And in this way, they're most able to push their pet projects among individual actors. That said, there are some limitations here to the presidency. Their administrations oftentimes are dominated by crises of various kinds. Again, you have to look no further than the Biden administration, which has had to deal with the COVID, the coronavirus pandemic ever since President Biden took office. He took office during the pandemic, and every major piece of legislation has had to have COVID considerations before it went through. And so even though the president does have a significant amount of power, their short term can often be eaten up very quickly by a crisis, much as we're seeing here with Biden. Now, in addition to that, they must always work with the Hill when drafting significant legislation, because if it's not going to pass, it doesn't really matter. So that takes me then to Congress, who I say has the most influence over what gets on the agenda. And simply because they have control over the agendas and the alternatives. This is also from a Kingdon text that I'll reference here in the description. A lot of these arguments have come from the Kingdon text that I will reference here. As I said, major national change has to come from Congress. It cannot be simply done by an executive order, because an executive order, per se, can be overwritten or rewritten or revoked, much as we saw with many of the Trump administration's, quote, achievements being overruled by President Biden on his first day of office. If you'll remember, there was that big, gigantic stack of executive orders that Biden basically undid the vast majority of the Trump administration's policies, you know, that were done through executive order. And simply, as I referred to on the president's slide, if you don't have the votes in Congress, national change, really lasting national change in the form of statutes and law, don't come. And in addition to that, while the bureaucracies and the department heads really have to stick to like one or two issues, and the president is sometimes stuck based on crises, Congress can really cover all kinds of issues. They're not really beholden to covering one thing or the other. They can pick whatever they really want because they have such a widespread and wide control over various pieces of legislation, committees, et cetera, et cetera. So their agendas can be quite fluid. However, I would say within Congress, there is one house within Congress that is really the biggest power player in terms of agenda setting, and that would be the Senate. They're the real powerhouse and the strongest actor in my eyes. Just for a quick little few things that they impact the other branches, as we talked about. They confirm or deny presidential appointments, as they have in the past. They've denied it and overruled the will of the president. They confirm judicial appointments, which has impacts on the courts. They confirm electoral votes, which was something that we didn't really even know in terms of popular common knowledge, that was a thing until last year in 2021, when there were issues over in the insurrection attempts surrounding the Senate's confirmation. And until a few rogue senators really brought this to national attention, it was not on anyone's agenda. And this is something that had gone on for hundreds of years without any issue. I would argue that the senators command more extensive media attention. The best example of this would be Harry Truman, who would zigzag all over the country while he was a senator to make sure that military expenditures for World War II were being done responsibly. And this eventually rose him up to a particular national power and standing that he was elected as FDR's vice president. And when FDR died in office, Truman took over. So there is really a lot of power in the Senate. To go a little bit further on that point, the Senate doesn't take up a lot of bills that the House of Representatives passes. The House passes a lot, but in order for it to get to the Senate and through the Senate, it takes a lot of legwork. The best examples of this come in the form of civil rights bills and anti-lynching bills. And anti-lynching bills, there were several of them that passed the House in the 1910s, the 1930s, but they didn't become law at the federal level because they didn't pass the Senate, because they didn't get out of the committees, and because they didn't get on the agenda, on the main Senate floor. They didn't get there because the Southern committee chairs did not allow it to get on the agenda. I would also argue, too, that the filibuster creates a second veto gate, which is a veto gate. It's just very various points in the government where a bill can be stopped. And because you need not only the majority party, but the minority party as well, to vote in favor of legislation, there is now a second way to stop legislation, which gives the Senate a lot more power to control what comes into its house. In addition to that, the Senate operates under six-year terms. That is much longer than any House of Representatives member, and it's longer than the president can hold office. So they're not really held back by crises in the same way as the president is, and they can stay in office for very, very long times. As a president is really only can be in office for 8 years, a senator can conceivably go for the rest of their lives. And many of them do. Many senators die in office. And so what ends up happening here is that the Senate can exert control over the federal agenda much longer than any given presidential administration, and in a much less reactive way than even the House of Representatives. So that is why, in my eyes, the Senate is truly the number one power player when it comes to what gets on the agenda.